And still another hour of open lines to go. When we come back in just a moment, before we even take some calls, I'm going to read you a couple emails of a couple astute listeners regarding the missing planes and the crashed plane. So we'll be back in a moment with those on Coast to Coast AM. I'm going to start a segment, I think, called We Get Emails, because we get so many incredible emails from you. They're well worth sharing. So I might do some segments like that. I've got two here that I want to share with you. One is from Will. Says, George, I'm a police detective, and I wanted to comment on the caller that asked about touch DNA and why that hasn't been analyzed, as we were talking about Bigfoot. Touch DNA is rare to be able to use due to preservation. Touch DNA has to be obtained very quickly or from a well-preserved area. Bigfoot touch DNA from a footprint would be found outside and rarely found quickly. Left to the elements, DNA disappears quickly, so it's unlikely a usable sample would be found. Thank you so much for that, Will. And then on the missing plane from Merlin. George, Boeing makes two of every plane, called sister ships. MH370's build number is 9M-MRO. Its twins, 9M-MRD. Just so happens, MH370's twins call sign was MH17 on the 17th of July. MH370 might still be on the land somewhere. MH17 was the twin that was blown up. Something strange going on here. Gosh, I didn't know that. This is information that not even the networks pick up. Truly bizarre. It really does get strange. Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll go to first-time caller Carl in Connecticut to get things started for us. Hello, Carl.
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm fine, sir, and I hope you are too.
Absolutely. Hey, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I enjoy your show. I'll make three quick points, and I'd like to take any comments off the air. First of all, on the future space travel, I know you were talking about an international effort. Personally, I'd rather see a United States flag on the next mission versus a UN flag. In 1968, the Apollo mission that circled the moon was a huge boost to the morale of the country, and I think that would be a huge boost today with the state of
sure.
things are in.
But, I mean, if we can't get it done financially, I'd rather at least be done with a federation.
Fair enough. Okay. Fair enough. As long as there's space travel, I think that's the big thing. Yeah. Also, as far as I can't remember if it was last night or the night before, you had a physicist on, an astrophysicist, talking about space expansion. And we all know space is expanding. And they say the galaxies are moving further. There's more space being created between the galaxies. And this leads into my third point, because I asked this Shostak this face-to-face. How is that possible if Andromeda and the Milky Way are going to collide in another, whatever it is, 300 million years? We have two galaxies that are going to collide, yet the galaxies are supposedly, space is expanding between them. So I can't really get my arms around that. But that leads into my third point, where I met Seth, was at a convention called Space Fest. This year it was in Pasadena, and you would be a natural fit as one of the speakers.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with Space Fest, but they have all the Apollo astronauts.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that. Sure. If you know them well, have them get a hold of us.
Absolutely. I can contact the people. And the Space Fest 6 was in Pasadena in May. I'm not sure where number 7 will be, if there is a number 7, but you would be a natural fit as one of the speakers. Seth was one of the speakers. He was incredible.
He's great.
I sat right next to Edgar Mitchell at the banquet, and I met all the moonwalkers. It was an experience of a lifetime, and you would be a natural fit as one of the speakers.
I bet, Carl, when you were a little boy, you loved space, didn't you?
Well, I was born in 64. As a little boy, I remember in 1969, Apollo 11. I can barely remember it, but we gathered around the black and white TV.
Uh-huh. We did, too.
And back then, the TVs were like a piece of furniture. They were a big cabinet. they weren't.
So same with the stereos. They were just great big piece of wood furniture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But there was nothing that brought this country together. And at a time when we needed it, during the late 60s and early 70s with Vietnam, and the U.S. flag on the Saturn V was a big thing to bring us together. And I really think that it would pay dividends if we invested the money and did that again today.
Well, we need to do something. Carl, thanks for your insight.
Thank you, George. I love your show.
Next time I go back to Detroit, I've got to go down in the basement and check my mom's records. She has, I don't know how far back they go. That's how far back they go. I mean, she had the little 45, she had the 33s, she had all those classics. All those classics. Got to look at those. Might be worth putting on eBay, Mom. You never know. Mary is in Toronto on the international line. Hello, Mary. Go ahead.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hello. Yes, hello. Yes, I had a house in Paradise Valley, Georgia. I really want to tell you this for many years now. I had a house in Paradise Valley, Arizona, and I used to come home in the evening, and you could really tell, you know, when the summer season was over.
Yeah.
The winter season, lots of traffic, and I'd swing my car in the driveway, and you could see all the planes still waiting to land and circling. And I remember one night I was alone with two children, like an 8-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I pulled in after shopping just down the road, about 5 minutes down the road. I pulled in, and my husband was away, and my other son was away, and I pulled in, and I said, look, kids, you can really tell that it's May now, that the winter season's over, because there's hardly any lights in the sky and it's a nice, quiet evening.
Yeah.
It was May, just after the long weekend. I took my children in, and when I came up to take the groceries from the car, I could hear a whirring sound, like when you use like a gas torch. It was like, and I was quite frightened. I thought it was my car. So I went all around the car several times with the back of the trunk up, and my kids were inside alone. And I was trying to figure out why my car was still making this noise. And I finally, I put my hands on my hips and looked at this and looked straight ahead. And when I looked up into the sky, George, there was a massive, big sort of diamond square thing, pitch black, with hardly any lights on. And I can tell you, my house was over 5,000 square feet big, and this thing was bigger than my house.
That's
it was
huge.
Very low, and it was hovering. I can tell you, it was very clear. I had my glasses on and everything, and I thought that was interesting that there was very little air traffic that night, because usually, you know, there's tons of it, and over the pool during the day, there was tons of them coming in and out, coming in and out. We were very close to the Phoenician Hotel, and I can tell you, I was frightened for my life. I ran in with the trunk open with my groceries there, my children and the one-year-old. I was so worried. I panicked. I was phoning. I thought, I was a Canadian, and I knew there was like an Air Force base. So I was dialing like 411, trying to get emergency, trying to find some sort of American base. And I found the base there that was there, and I got someone. I got a lady on the telephone, and I said, look out your window. This thing is larger than my house. If it lands, I think it must be from Kosovo, because there was some Kosovo issue. I said, what could this be coming down here? If it lands, more than my house is going to be crushed. And she said, I can't look out a window. I'm more than 15 or 20 stories under the ground. I can't see anything. So at that point, she said, advised me to call the police. So I hung up, and I called the local police, and the officer that spoke to me said that he was driving in the area all evening, and it was pitch black, which also this item over my house was very black, but I could see basically the outline was like, I thought, a diamond or square in the sky, larger than 5,000 square feet. And eventually, I just really thought that was the end of our lives. And then it was gone, vanished, and no one was the wiser.
And nobody hurt.
Well, I don't know, because it was a quiet night. I can't remember. I know it was. I know my child was born in 97, so he was at least one. So it was 98 or 99, but I think it was 98, and it was May. And I do recall that the schools were closing in May, and many of the people would leave and go to other alternative properties, to San Diego, to Massachusetts.
Sure.
And I was really alone there. There was hardly any, but we had a gated community, so I had, you know, the gate attendant, but
well,
I didn't even bother.
But you, what you've described is one of the old-time classic UFO cases. By the way, circle your calendar for November 8th, because I've got a major event in Toronto at the Queen Elizabeth Theater. So just remember that. Anyway, Tommy, you got another text. We'll have two for the night left. This is one of them.
Oh, we do, from Corey in Salt Lake. George, so I'm driving around listening and I can't get through. Do you think people are scared of ETs? I can't wait to see one.
I think some people are scared of ETs. I think other people are not. Are you?
No. In fact, I don't know anybody that can't wait to see an ET.
But it would be kind of chilling. You got to admit, if you were looking at an alien gray, big eyes, big head, just looking at you, as exciting as that is, it is kind of scary.
I got to tell you, I don't agree. Not for me anyway. For me, I just want to run up to him and say, hey, you know.
He'd probably go out with you. Probably go to a Kings hockey game.
Come to the show.
You never know. Okay, let's go next. Who is next? Let's go to Billy in Anaheim, California. Hi, Billy. Thanks for holding so long. Wow.
George, I am so blessed to be able to talk to you. I've had so many experiences, but the main battle that I have with myself is being raised Christian in a biblical sense. I was raised in boys' homes. But I've had several experiences as a young child before I even knew about the Bible. And in relation to what's going on in the world today, I mean, just everything, George, and you have so much experience. My fiance and I, we listen to you all the time. I have a question for you.
Sure.
In relation to all the people that you've talked to, the experience, the feeling that you're getting, I mean, you know, we had 2012 that just passed by. There was a big movie. There was all the things that were going on. But do you believe that the things that we're seeing in the world right now, I mean, with the Gaza Strip, with everything that's going on as far as, like, lawlessness, and it's like people are just, like, throwing off abandon, and they're like, you believe it, that we can be over-spiritualizing things?
I think what's happening right now, and unless some smarter heads prevail, we are headed for a major catastrophe. We're not out of the woods economically yet. There are skirmishes all over the planet. It's, you know, an upcoming election year in a few years. It's just got all the makings of a disaster, a worldwide disaster. I can feel it. And we don't want it. People don't want it. People around the world don't want it. You know, every time I travel, I run into people from other countries, from China, from Russia, from Canada. I love Canadians. But I run into people all over the place. They don't want wars. They're sitting down having a glass of wine. They're having a great time. It's these lunatics who run governments who get us involved in stuff like this. My gosh. I mean, here's an example, and we'll get back to calls in a second. The Israeli Palestinian situation has got to be fixed. Look, I'm Middle Eastern, Christian Middle Eastern. I've always supported Israel and what they have to do. But we have got to get to a point where you've got to carve out a legitimate homeland for the Palestinians somewhere. Gaza is not it. And, you know, give them a piece of Iraq. That thing's collapsing anyways. But you've got to do something for those people. I've got some great Palestinian friends back in St. Louis. Heartwarming, dedicated, educated. I mean, it's abominable what's going on over there. If you went through there, if you toured some of those areas where these Palestinians have to live and the children are in squalor, you'd come home crying. It's a disaster. But the big issue is Jerusalem and the Holy Land, and nobody wants to give that up. So what are you going to do? It's a mess, but it's got to be fixed. But unless it's not, and I'm talking about all over the planet, things that you see happening, feeling, what I've been telling you for 3 years now, this weird feeling I'm having, it's going to blow up. It's going to be huge, and we're all headed for trouble. Anyways, Billy, thanks for your call. Appreciate that. Thank your girlfriend for listening as well. Let's go next to Mark in Eagle, Alaska. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show. Good to
hey,
have you
George,
with us.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Oh. I listen on long wire transistor radio. I pull you down on about five stations.
Well, thank you. Now, Alaska was not your hometown. You were born where?
I was born in West Virginia.
All right. I knew it. I was right.
I was raised in Indiana.
What got you to Alaska?
When I got out of the service, I came north to go into the mountains to look for gold.
Did you find any?
Aye, sir, aye. I got a wife and a whole bunch of kids and grandkids. And
how much gold did you find?
Well, how much money you got in the bank?
Not as much as you probably do.
Oh, all my money is in the bank. River bank.
Love it. What's on your mind?
Sir, I'm noting the signs in the heavens, these blood moons we got, and I'm curious as to whether we're seeing the year of Jubilee getting ready to come on next year.
Well, it may be. It may have already started some time ago, but you're very perceptive on that.
Well, you know, he talked about a double portion, and this year I seem to be getting a double portion, and I went on the internet to look it up, got five different answers. One guy concurred with 15, another one said 17, maybe 18, another guy said the year 21. And I was just curious if maybe you could find somebody smarter than I am, because I was just dumb hillbilly reading the Bible.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Keep listening to the show, Mark. We'll find some guests that we'll address that. Prophecy, blue moons, blood moons, you name it, they're all coming, and they're getting close, very close indeed. Let's take Joe in Toronto, International Line. Hey, Joe, always a pleasure.
Yeah, hi, George, how are you?
Good.
I'm good. Okay, a few nights ago, you were talking about comedians, and they couldn't make it today, right?
Right, like Jimmy Durante, I was saying.
Yeah. Yeah, first of all, you were born during the Korean War. I think you mentioned that,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Yeah, I was born during the Second World War. Now, I want to throw out some names here. This will take a half a minute, okay?
Sure, and if we run out of time, I'll hold you over.
Okay, Johnny Mathis, Roy Orbison, Andy Williams, Elvis, Pat Boone, Johnny Cash, Marty Robbins, the Shirelles, the Platters, Dean Martin, Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Peggy Lee, Patti Page, Brenda Lee, Barbara Streisand, Patsy Cline, The Carpenters, Perry Como. Why, these people all had beautiful voices. Why can't people sing today?
They were all giants. And I would put all of those tremendous singers in that same thing as Jimmy Durante, that if they came out today, they wouldn't make it.
Well, that's too bad.
I agree. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, of course, of course. But I want to make a suggestion, okay, George?
Sure.
Sometime play Roy Orbison in Dreams, and then after that, play Rod Stewart, Have I Told You Lately That I Love You, and you'll get a big laugh out of that.
Okay. We do play Orbison for bumper music. I've always liked him. Anyways, we're going to come back with final open line calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Now, you want to hear how the high strangeness continues in the two different plane episodes with Malaysia Airlines? Two of the 28 Australians that were killed when this plane was shot down over Ukraine were members of a family who lost two other relatives on the other Malaysian airline. What are the odds of that happening? Anyway, I shall be back in a moment. We will have final open line calls here for you on Coast to Coast AM. And this weekend, make sure you're listening to Coast to Coast. My colleague friend from Toronto, Richard Surratt, will be doing Saturday and Sunday this weekend with our incredible guest hosts for you. Let's go to the phones now. We shall pick it up by going to John in Seattle, Washington. Welcome to the program, John. Go ahead.
Hi. I was calling about the caller that called the Friday after Flight 370 went down. I think you were off that day.
That was March 8th. The plane went down. I would have been working that day.
It was the Friday after that.
The 15th?
So that would be the 14th.
Oh, I would have been working that day, too.
Well,
maybe it was on. Maybe you're thinking into a Saturday.
Maybe it could have been.
Yeah.
There was a caller from Canada that said that he was a radar tech from Canada, and that they had followed the Flight 370 all the way to 40 miles north of the Kazakhstan border.
Okay.
I figured that would put it pretty close to Omsk, Russia.
Pretty darn close. Yeah, this is the whole thing's weird, isn't it?
Right. I was just thinking that you know, if you could find that and play that and read your email about this other stuff, this caller from Canada is the only one that really rang true to me, because he had that kind of a tick in his voice that says, I'm telling you the truth, but yeah, I'm afraid you're not going to pay any attention to
it. Yeah, good point. Okay, we'll look that up. You think that was a week after the plane crashed?
Well, it was a call-in night, and I think it was a Friday.
Well, if it was a Friday, it was me, and I don't recall it, so it could have been a Saturday. That's very possible. We'll check into it. We'll see what we can come up with. We've got Carolyn in Fairmont, West Virginia now. Hello, Carolyn. It's your turn.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple things to tell you. You know, you had Glenys McCanus on your show.
Mm-hmm. The numbers
lady. Yeah, she was telling you that if you have financial problems, take a number 8 and put it in your wallet.
Right.
Well, lately I've been having some issues, and I went to my nephew's wedding, and there was a cardboard 8 on the table off that table 8. So after the wedding, I took that 8 and I put it in my wallet, and since then, it's all resolving.
Really? What's going on?
What do you mean, what's going on?
Tell me how it's resolving itself.
I don't know. Money's just coming everywhere.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I mean, what's the most that's rolling in?
Well, I don't know. Every time I open up my stock portfolio, it's going up to $10,000.
Wow. Good for you.
And then the other thing I wanted to ask you is, I know that you're a little bit older than me. I was born in 64.
But not necessarily wiser than you.
And I remember when the space stuff was going on, my dad would tell me, I was very little, I think I was about 4 years old, and he was saying, oh, sit down here, watch this, you know, this is history in the making, blah, blah, blah. He went on and on, and we would sit on the sofa, and we'd watch the space stuff that was
so
going
on. So you watched the moon landing in 1969.
Maybe so.
That's what you watched.
Yeah. Well, I remember my dad was explaining to me, well, this is where they are. And I remember the men on the TV would say, well, this is where they are and this is what's happening. And then I remember the astronaut saying something about seeing buildings and seeing certain things, and I said to my dad, well, I don't understand. I thought they were going to the moon. And it sounded like that they were, you know, looking at something on the earth. And my dad was a very, very polite man, but yet he was still trying to shush me. And I remember looking at my dad's face, looking very puzzled and having kind of like wrinkles on his forehead, trying to understand what was going on as well. And I kept saying, well, Dad, I thought they were going to the moon.
I wish that I had the opportunity to interview Neil Armstrong, of course, who was the first on the moon. I've interviewed Buzz Aldrin, and, you know, this hoopla about Buzz saying he saw a UFO, and he never said that. He never said that. What he did say is he saw an object that he couldn't identify, that it was probably a piece of one of the space debris or something. But he says, the fact that I didn't know exactly what it is, all right, you could call it a UFO, but it's not what we would consider to be a UFO. So Aldrin never went there, but Neil Armstrong would have been a great interview, because I would want to ask him, as Buzz says, they didn't see anything, but I'd like to ask Neil the same thing, you know, because I've always been told they saw UFOs on the far side of a crater. Who knows? Who knows? And, you know, one of the late astronauts, one of the original 7, Gordon Cooper, he saw UFOs. He was a believer. Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14, he was a believer. And there are a few others out there. So something's going on. Tom, you've got your final text for me.
From Katrina in Hartford, Connecticut. George, please answer my text. I want to know if you believe that evil is in everyone, whether it comes out or not.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think evil permeates itself. I think people are born without evil, and then something happens.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I was reading this, and I was thinking to myself, have you ever met somebody that you just say is the nicest person? There's just no way that they could be that way.
No, not at all. I have, though, met pure evil, haven't you?
I might have, if I'm thinking about the same thing you are.
I've seen it. I've seen shape-shifting. I've seen it. I've seen demonic possession.
By the same token, have you ever met someone that you think is just such a great person, and then you think, no way, and then they become...
Oh, yeah. I've witnessed it. I've witnessed it. Okay, thanks, Tom.
Yep.
All right, have yourself a good weekend.
Okay, you too.
Let's go to Abilene, Texas. Sid is with us on the wild card line. Hey, Sid, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi, Sid.
I hope you're having a nice morning.
I sure am. Doing coast to coast with all our great listeners?
Yeah.
It's the best.
Can't get better than that.
No, sir.
I was wanting to talk to you about something back in 2097.
Back in 97?
No, 2007, I mean.
2000, yeah. You said 2097. I don't think we're there yet.
a little bit ahead of myself.
Just a little bit.
It was a hot day. It was on the 4th of July in 2007.
All right. What happened?
And my wife and her brother and his family got up and went down to his mother's house. They was going to have a barbecue down there. And I was going to come a little bit later. And I was at the house. And I know it was a UFO that was flying over my house, and it just stayed above the house, just hovering.
What'd it look like?
I couldn't see it.
Why'd you know it was there?
Because I could hear it.
Oh, you could hear it. Most UFOs don't make any noise. What did it sound like?
It sounded like a whining noise, like a high-pitched whining noise. But anyway, it left. I could hear it when it left. It just went up through the sky, you know. And I come out there, I didn't see anything. Well, I went down to my father-in-law's house, and me and him were standing outside talking. Everybody else was in the house in the living room, and we were standing out in the backyard in front yard talking. And I looked down the road. At the end of the road, I seen this. Seen something kind of run right in the middle of the road, just coming right in the middle of the road, ran a circle right down the middle. He come right around the corner in the middle of the road, turned down the road, and he was in the middle of the road running. And I didn't think too much about it, and I was talking to my father-in-law, and I kept watching this object getting closer and closer. And I didn't know what to think it was. You know, I'd never seen nothing like it.
It wasn't a car, that's for sure.
No, it looked like a man in a malted suit, like it was malted over it, malted glass over it.
But just like a man. It wasn't like a spaceship.
No, it was a man.
Huh. Might this have been the same thing that was over your house?
I think it had something to do with the thing that was over my house. I do.
Man in some kind of bubble ship or something.
But when it got down close to where we were at, I thought perhaps it's just me. Maybe I'm imagining it, you know. But when it got down to the other end of the fence, all the dogs, about five or six of them, ran down to the edge of the fence at the corner and started barking and started following it back this way barking.
So they saw something, too.
Yeah, and then my father-in-law seen it. He looked at it, and he didn't know what it was. You know, I said, what is that? He said, I don't know what that is. And he got down there in front of the house, and I had my truck there. My wife and her brother-in-law had their car there. And I got down there, and, I mean, we was down there, and I heard that molten glass figure stopped behind the pickup in the car, and I told my father-in-law, says, stop right out there behind the car. I said, go up there and see what this is. And I walked over to close to the edge of the fence. I said, oh, and it spoke to me.
Did it speak English?
No, it didn't sound like English.
Huh.
And I couldn't understand what it said, but anyway, her dad kept saying, going out there, going out there. So I went up, started out the gate, and I looked underneath the cars to see if I could see any legs or anything. And I couldn't see no legs or feet. So I started walking around the car, and as I walked around the edge of the car, there was nothing there.
Nothing at all.
I thought it might have went to the back end of the car. So I went back there and looked. It wasn't there either.
It disappeared on you. That's weird. That's one bizarre story. We got to have open lines one night, Tom. I'll come up with a title for it, where we have people with the strangest calls, like that one from Sid in Abilene. Sid, thanks. It's time for one or two more quick calls. Let us go to Jeff in Bethune, South Carolina, first-time caller. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, good morning, George. Love your show.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
The question I have for you, over a year ago, I was at the dentist, and they were taking x-rays of the backside of my teeth.
Yeah.
I got an x-ray, and there's a piece of metal in my saliva gland.
Huh.
Dentist has no idea where it came from. Doctors I've talked to, I would like to see what it is, that they should be a pretty invasive surgery to get it out. But I wouldn't know who to take this thing to.
Oh, gosh, I wish Roger Lear were still alive. I will tell you that if you get this extracted, are you going to have it taken out?
Yes, I believe I am.
Okay, save it and call us back, and we'll find someone to analyze this. Roger Lear just died, and he was an expert in what we call alien implants, and I don't think anybody's really replaced him yet. We have to find that person.
Okay.
But this would have been perfect for him. He probably would have wanted to attend the surgery.
Yeah, because all the doctors I talked to, they can't even understand how it got in there or where it came.
Yeah, no, you got to get it out. Who knows what it is, first and foremost. Could be a chip of metal that somehow got into you, but who knows? Do you have any strange dreams or anything like that?
When I was maybe like 6 or 7, I had seen it. What I thought was a UFO that landed. We lived on a farm then.
See, well, that might add to that story. So get it extracted and then definitely get back to us, and we'll try to make arrangements to get it in the hands of somebody who truly might be able to analyze it and let us all know what it is.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light.
can see the light. And I also see a ghost. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.